From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Science fiction, by Oxford definition, is fiction based on imagined future, scientific or technological advances, and major social or environmental changes, frequently portraying space or time travel and life on other planets. Though the point of sci-fi has always been to explore the depths of human imagination, people of color have famously been left out of the biggest fantasy worlds, Lord of the Rings, OG Doctor Who, Harry Potter, and Back to the Future. Those are just a few examples of how the reaches of imagination stop at skin color, but that's where Afrofuturism comes in.
Upwards of 60 trillion parallel universes. We need to rewind to this Earth's Tulsa in 1921. The computer needs a motherboard to give it instructions.
What's a motherboard?
Me.
Fool up!
I talk to people about Afrofuturism, I remind them that it's a way of thinking about futures or other realities, but doing so by referencing African diasporic, Black cultural lenses and perspectives. So it's something that intersects imagination and liberation and technology and mysticism.
An interesting topic, because though the term is Futurism, it signals time, and time is very complex in Black consciousness. Beyond the event horizon, time exists all at once, past, present, and future together. And that operates in Black consciousness all the time.
The National Museum of African American History and Culture defines Afrofuturism as a history of Black futures, as it immerses us in this idea and conversation of reimagining and reclaiming the past and present for a more empowering future for African Americans. Afrofuturism is a way for Black people to see and expand on the new ideas and shape a future of our own. You can see it as an artistic movement, a philosophy. It expresses the very notion of Black identity, agency, and freedom. We see it everywhere, in music like Erykah Badu, Janelle Monáe, Sun Ra, Alice Coltrane, and Miles Davis. We see it in film, like Black Panther and Lovecraft Country. And then we see it in art, like Jean-Michel Basquiat and Octavia Butler. It blends the African diaspora as a movement in literature, music, art, and science. Knowing that Afrofuturism has long been a part of Black culture, it's not just in the future, but it's here with us right now. Black futurism is not just a concept, but a profound emotional landscape of hope, resilience, and radical imagination. We're privileged to have Yatasha L. Womack, a visionary who doesn't just describe the future, but feels it, breathes it, and creates it. Yatasha is an acclaimed author, speaker, filmmaker, dancer, independent scholar, and champion of humanity and the imagination. Yatasha, happy Black History Month, and welcome to Dialogue.
Thank you. Happy Black History Month to you, Kennedy, and everyone else.
Afrofuturism to many could be an oxymoron. A people who have, in the American context, had their last name stripped of history and erased, being bold enough to see themselves in a world yet unseen. Tell us, what is Afrofuturism and is it needed in this moment?
Well, I like to remind people that everyone has a relationship with their future. And all cultures around the world in all spaces and times have had a relationship to how they experience space and time and how they celebrated that. And so when I talk to people about Afrofuturism, I remind them that it's a way of thinking about futures or other realities, but doing so by referencing African diasporic, Black cultural lenses and perspectives. So it's something that intersects imagination and liberation and technology and mysticism. You can see it in our films like Black Panther or music by Parliament Funkadelic or an Alice Coltrane or Janelle Monáe. But, you know, it's also something that's expressed through cosmologies or beliefs. You can think about Martin Luther King talking about his visions for futures, you know, the I Have a Dream speech, this idea of speaking to what you would like the future to be, and also spaces where people create that image, that feeling, and how you sort of relate to that in real time.
Yatasha told me that sometimes all we need is a shift in our perspective to remember and imagine what's possible. And you can do that by listening to a song, reading a poem, as it can help us reconnect with emotions and stories to understand how we feel. That's how I feel anytime I listen to Erykah Badu, especially her song, Didn't You Know? Miss Badu sings about the complex feeling of how it's time to save the world, but where in the world is all the time? And even though we stumble off the path, I know that my heart will guide me back. Many describe Afrofuturism as a healing practice that can lead to self-discovery. You have a new book coming out on March 25th, delving more into this. How has imagining alternative futures been a form of emotional liberation for Black creators, especially in moments of collective trauma?
One of the fascinating things about putting together the Afrofuturist evolution was that it was in part a reflection on some of the experiences of just talking about Afrofuturism. I've written books that were science fiction or surrealist, Afro-surrealist kinds of projects. I have a graphic novel that's coming out, you know, within a year called Black Cube. I wrote a project called Rayla 2212 or Spaceship in Bronzeville. So there was a whole creative wellspring of works that came through me in the midst of doing all these talks. And then with that, engaging with so many people who are working as Afrofuturists or thinking about these ideas, you know, it's like, oh, wait, there's some other insights here. One of the things that became more obvious to me several years ago, you know, there were some people who thought of Afrofuturism as kind of this great by and by, the heaven you will one day get to. And I started hearing that and how some people were framing things. I was like, no, Afrofuturism isn't this thing you will one day get to. Afrofuturism is now. Your relationship to futures and space and time is a present activity. One that's as informed by our relationship to histories, known and unknown, as it is to how we think about our futures. We make decisions based on sometimes what we think is possible, what we're told is probable. And so your future or futures, right, can't inform your decision making, whether you're conscious of it or not. And that realization is a present process.
Dirty computer walking by. If you look closer, you'll recognize.
on top of being an acclaimed author, Yatasha has gone from Paris to Cuba with her Afrofuturist dance film, A Love Letter to the Ancestors from Chicago. It's been featured in film festivals all around the world. But before she made it to the stage, she started her career as a journalist. Leaving her hometown of Chicago to attend Clark Atlanta University, she discovered what it meant to be a storyteller, and especially in the world of Afrofuturism.
You know, so it's all about this idea of acquiring knowledge and thinking about these futures and wanting to contribute to creating one. So when I was a freshman, you know, I met friends who were really into this, and it was just a big point of conversation. And some years later, as I started, you know, writing for the Chicago Defender and later Tribune and other publications covering the arts and culture, you know, I would come to engage with people who are musicians and artists, and they're creating these sort of stories around the future as well, thinking about space or time and this kind of interdimensional relationship to things. I guess I didn't think much of it because it was always a part of life. And then later I met a woman who was telling me she was teaching Afrofuturism. I said, well, Afrofuturism, what's that? And it reminded me of these conversations from college. And it put it in a different framework because she started talking about a lineage of thought of people, you know, who were African-American or who were Black, who lived in different spaces, who were thinking about futures and those kinds of conversations and works being related. And it's something about the naming of the term Afrofuturism that I deeply connected with. And as I began to research it, realized, oh, wait, I'm not just researching and writing about this. I'm a part of this. I am a creator in this space. I'm immersed in these ideas from different vantage points.
You've also connected the work of Afrofuturism into physical practices like samba and freestyle dancing. Can you explain that connection? What does Black futurism feel like in your body when you connect to the diaspora?
One, let me just say, I love that question. As a person who came up in dance, I'm very rhythmic, right? And I think if you're a person who likes dancing, especially you come through Chicago, you're into house music and dancing, and you're just really enjoying yourself. You can lose yourself in the music and the movements. And then when you get trained in certain dance styles, we don't think about this as dancers, but you're really articulating yourself in space and time. You know, you're moving in a space to measured, metered time. So if you get into certain kinds of music, it has certain kinds of rhythm patterns. So there's one set of ways, or there's a probability of ways you can move if you're dancing to, say, a James Brown song. There's a way that you dance in samba, and there's insights that you gain because it has a certain rhythm pattern that's a little different than if I'm stepping, you know, to a song by the Isley Brothers. Both create a sense of joy, both two different kinds of dances, but the experience of it is one where it's like, oh wait, there's other kinds of lessons because there's other rhythms in it. Give you another perspective, another way of thinking about sort of these space-time movements and ways of operating. And, you know, so one thing that's fun for me when I do my Afrofuturism dance therapy workshops and, you know, or dance experience workshops, and sometimes I would do them with teenagers, and we're learning all the styles. We're doing West African traditional dance, we're doing, you know, samba, we're doing salsa, we're doing stepping, we're doing hip hop. And they're like, man, okay, wow, this is kind of different. Or that relationship and that experience, your body feels a little different, you know, and you push past conventions in your mind, but also certain boundaries you might have about how you even move your body. Yeah, so dance to me can be like this whole portal of insights.
We often talk about representation, but I want to talk about recognition. What emotional breakthrough happens when Black people see themselves truly centered in futures that they've systematically been erased from?
I was a kid who was always encouraged to use my imagination, but I was also a kid who grew up seeing a lot of Black images as well. And so sometimes when you have that experience, you could take for granted, it's like, oh, if I didn't see myself in a certain scenario or see someone kind of looking like me, whether it's a girl, a person of color, a Black person, it's like, oh, I can imagine that. Because there's sometimes people have a tough time imagining something if they're told it's not possible. or it's not probable. Or maybe they can imagine someone, a Black person, doing something, but they can't imagine themselves doing it, right? So when it comes to this conversation about like futures and possibilities, and you know, there's the kind of practical imaginations, or whatever we want to call practical. But there's so much insight and play and fun and wonder in the fantastic. So when we're like creating these like fantastical futures with trees that are actually fluorescent, but they're actually talking, and they have memory from other times, and it's like the baobab, and it's, you know, you could say, oh, well, that's a fantastical kind of image, but that also connects to a lot of stories we've had about trees in the past. We're just adding sort of this magical element to it. Trees have sometimes been the center of spiritual activation or celebration for a lot of cultures around the world throughout time. So in this, you know, space to say, oh, wow, let me create a future with like this magical tree, and there's this technology where it could talk to you about the past, and it has these elements, and it does this and it does that. But doing so in the fantastic allows us to take off whatever kind of limitations we might have around possibility. And that realm of play and wonder and storytelling is enriching space to connect with and write in and create. And so to me, valuing that, the realm of imagination, is important. Because, I mean, at some point, we're all imagining something. You know, you're imagining what you don't want, or you're imagining something that somebody told you. I mean, so we're always kind of using our imagination, but consciously valuing kind of this realm of the fantastic, and feeling like you too can create kind of these things. And, you know, it's just about us connecting and sharing beyond our devices, you know, making time to do that, right? So that's it. It's just a reminder of connecting us to the lessons, the wellspring of lessons from the human experience. And some of those lessons do come from the experiences and cosmologies and ideas, visions, and dreams from people of the African continent, people of the African diaspora, you know, Black people.
I hear the drizzle of the rain, it's falling from my window. And in the corners of my mind, I hope that I'll get to see you again.
Speaking of valuing the fantastic and remembering that we all deserve joy, what would you say to the young Black boy or the young Black girl out there who sees their younger self witnessing the future that they create and imagine? What would you say to them?
Dream big. That's what I was told. Dream big. And, you know, and hold those dreams dear. There's a lot of people who had a lot of really big dreams, and you're part of lineage of people who had some really exciting visions and wellspring of things to pull from to create some really exciting works.
Yeah. Yatasha Womack, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Despite a historic lack of representation in mainstream science fiction, Afrofuturism has left its mark on American society throughout the decades. A famous example, of course, is Octavia E. Butler. She was not only the first Black woman to ever publish science fiction, she's also known as the mother of Afrofuturism. In novels like Kindred and Parable of the Sower, she uses the perspective of Black female protagonists with magical properties to explore and reimagine the Black experience. Her influence on American culture is so iconic that she has three different things in space named in her honor: an asteroid, a mountain on the moon of Pluto, and the Perseverance rover's landing site on Mars.
She could write a science fiction work which goes back into the past, but it has both present and future in it as well. If you think about it, if you're in the present and you're suddenly thrown back into the past, you have present and past, but the idea is to change the past in order to change the future.
What is this? Am I dreaming? Is this a dream? The date, the year. Tell me the year.
It's 1815.
To learn more about the history and what surrounds Afrofuturism, I spoke with Professor Lou Turner.
So speaking of the past, Afrofuturism is also a bit of a political framework. Mm-hmm. Could you break down how we've seen that in the 50s? You know, there was the Freedom Fighters in the 60s and 70s, the notable Black Panthers, to give listeners more of an understanding of frameworks of these major movements that we've seen in the past.
Case could be made that there were certain kinds of Afrofuturism, which goes back even to the Harlem Renaissance of the 1920s, if not earlier. It's been around for some time, this idea, but the idea of Afrofuturism in terms of visual arts, and I think there are other art forms in which you could see it. You referenced the Black Panthers. I mean, the Black Panther newspaper had very important graphic artists like Emory Douglas, who imagined African-American futures as well. You had, during the Black Power movement, you had the Black Arts movement, which is what I came out of back in the day when I was a student at Howard University and then on the West Coast in Los Angeles. But the idea there was that the Black Arts movement had a number of genres, but one of them was, I guess you could call Afrofuturism, for instance, the Afro-Cobra Art Collective, which was in Chicago. Their work was very Afrofuturist before there was the term Afrofuturism. They had their own aesthetic they call Kool-Aid colors. The palette of paints that they use are based on Kool-Aid, which comes right out of the community. In Black arts, you have this cross-fertilization of disciplines. I call it transdisciplinary as against just interdisciplinary. So there's always been that dimension to Black arts, whether on the continent or in the diaspora.
How do you think Afrofuturism offers tools for resistance and reimagining?
It's a very good question. I think that because we're in the midst of such a trend in the arts, I think that it's still to be seen. Because it is Afrofuturism and it originates from the imagination, that automatically brings in consciousness. By definition, the imagination is part of our cognition as human beings, our consciousness. And so the idea of whether the imagination can be made a tool for liberation, we'll see. I think for Black people, if you ask them, they say, well, what was influential in your life? It's usually that they read something in which a Black person or Black people had some kind of agency and that inspired them. Reading and imagining is significant in the development of the social and political consciousness of many, many people. So is song, for instance. The Civil Rights Movement had a soundtrack, if you will, of its own. We Shall Overcome, We Shall Not Be Moved, all kinds of songs like that. Marvin Gaye's What's Going On in relationship to the Vietnam War and the Civil Rights Movement. All of these things, were, in other words, flipped the whole aesthetic of ideas of what is beautiful and what is not.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today.
So in the 2024 election, what did you think of the Black political consciousness?
Black political consciousness showed once again that Black America is a nation within a nation. It's been that way. The United States, America, always resets to its default, and that's racism. We call it different things in different times, white backlash, this, that, and the other, but it's default. To me, that's one of the important takeaways from the election. Black people have always been the victims of this culture of political compromise. And yet, one of the questions we'll have to deal with in the aftermath of this election is the attitude that Black people as a people will have to take with respect to the Democratic Party. It is clear to me that the Democratic Party has not really done much for Black people. This election wasn't about the price of eggs.
So digital technologies and social media have transformed Black political organizing for better or for worse. Do you think that we can trust the digital spaces to be a safe harbor for Black imaginative thought?
Those digital spaces can be used for organizing, and they also can be used for what academics at the end of World War II published in a big monumental study called The Authoritarian Personality. It's about anti-Semitism in the United States. The lead author was a man by the name of Theodore Adorno, who had been an immigrant from Germany. Critical theory. You often hear about critical theory, critical race theory. The origin of it is the Frankfurt School in Germany. And they had to get out of Dodge with the rise of Hitler in the 1930s, and many of them came to the United States. And Adorno led a team that was studying right after World War II. World War II ends in 1945. The revelations about the Holocaust, millions of Jews and other people such as Roma were murdered in concentration camps. This study was to study authoritarianism within the consciousness of Americans right after World War II. And these were social psychologists, and they created something called the F scale, or the fascism scale. And through questionnaires, surveys, and whatnot, they demonstrated Americans had as fascist a point of view as Germans did in the rise of Hitler. And this is after the Holocaust. This is after the revelations about this mass extermination, and that anti-Semitism could be entertained as reasonable in the United States. So again, the title of the book, of the study, was called The Authoritarian Personality. Something deeply authoritarian in the American psyche. And the study was actually, the surveys were done in liberal Berkeley and liberal Los Angeles. So this wasn't somewhere in the South. This is in California. And so the media can be used to platform that. Whatever the media is, it doesn't matter. The only thing that changes is the media. The message, the ideology, has remained consistent across time. The only thing that's changed is the technology. And the thing you got to get to is, what is the basis of the ideology? And there you got to go deep.
So how do you see the opposition forming in the future, whether it is us realizing how to create our own groups of radical Black thought?
There's people who are organizing in town, both academic from the campus, activists in town, as well as other people, including political folks. So they're organizing right now. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see the kind of work that they do. And political education is going to be a very important part of it. As I tell students in my classes, history is very, very important. It's the real content of developing a theory. There has to be theory with practice, not just practice. You have to have a vision where you're going, mm-hmm. and an understanding, mm-hmm. of how this system, and particularly the economy, works. But it's happening. It's happening right here. These organizations are in a nascent state. They're just beginning. Mm-hmm. They're figuring out things. They're pulling from the past. This comes back to Afrofuturism. The Sankofa bird is looking back at the past, but also developing on the basis of the present. At the same time, you have to have a vision of the future. It's not just what you're against. It's what you're for. One of the important natures of dialectical thinking is comprehending the positive and the negative. There's a positive here to be extracted from this negative moment. It will really turn on the consciousness of Black people. The election showed the consciousness of Black people, but moving forward, it's going to turn and depend on developing that consciousness of Black people to the new stage. And my hope is that you all, young people, are going to do it.
Professor Lou Turner, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
As we navigate the tumultuous waters of the world right now, Afrofuturism is a reminder of how Black consciousness has always been a part of our world. Whether it's in the fabric of our music or the way our art is portrayed, science and Black political movements have constantly imagined a better future for us. And if anything, it shows us that it's happening here and now. For Dialogue, I'm Kennedy Vinson.